T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
92.9 FM ESPN presents the area's only national columnist who spends his afternoons bringing unique perspective to Memphis radio. He'll make you think. He'll make you laugh. He'll sometimes make you change the station if children are around. And he apologizes in advance for that. It's 4 o'clock. Let's get into it. This is the Gary Parrish Show.
My name is Gary Parrish, talking to you from 54th and Broadway, Midtown Manhattan, New York City. Brad Carson back in studio in Memphis producing the program. Glad he's with me. Glad you're with me. Hope you're getting through the day. No obstacles. No disruption.
Well, Daddy lost most everything. On horse, whiskey, and wedding rings.
And I hope you're ready for a special 90-minute edition of the Gary Parrish Show, because this will be a special 90-minute edition of the Gary Parrish Show. Grizz Magic tip at 6 p.m. Central, and because we are the radio home of your Memphis Grizzlies, we are contractually obligated to have a 30-minute pregame show for a 6 o'clock tip that has to start at 5:30, so I'm out at 5:30. In other words, the show has been sliced by 25%. So let me set this afternoon schedule for you, and then we'll dive straight into college basketball. Both the NCAA tournament, which has been wild today, and some notable coaching changes since I last talked to you 22 hours ago. At 4:20, Dan Walken is going to join me. He's national columnist, USA Today. I'll talk to him about a number of things, including his alma mater, Vanderbilt, firing its basketball coach earlier today. That's Bryce Drew. Dan Walken is going to join me in about 20 minutes. When I finish that segment, I usually do four notable stories at 4:44, at which point I discuss four previously undiscussed stories, but I don't want to get too far away from college basketball today, so we'll just use that segment to keep you updated on the games in progress in the NCAA tournament. We'll keep talking college basketball right through the bottom of the hour. Jeff Calkins will join me a little after 5 o'clock, just like always. Then I will, right before 5:30, do dinner to go, and we'll get out of here. So that's the rundown. Got a lot to get to, but I wanted to start with college basketball because the NCAA tournament continues to unfold. Coaching carousel is spinning good. First, let's get into the games, then the coaching changes. And I want to start with the games that are just now wrapping up, because Virginia and Tennessee, number one seed and number two seed in the South Regional, were both in danger spots this afternoon. Virginia found itself down once again by double digits to a 16 seed. Obviously, last year, Tony Bennett's Cavaliers became the first one seed to ever lose to a 16 seed. And you just couldn't imagine them being in a danger spot again. In fact, on the CBS Sports Ion College Basketball podcast, and if you haven't subscribed yet, you should. I was talking to Matt Norlander. Yeah. I'm like, can you imagine what happens if, like, Virginia's down 7 at the half to Gardner Webb on Friday afternoon? I mean, it just becomes, what in the world? And they weren't down 7, but they were down 6.
Yeah.
And they were still, at that point, according to odds makers, expected to come back and win the game. But the idea that they were trailing at the half after becoming the first one to ever lose to a 16 is just crazy. Now, they roll in Gardner Webb right now. They've outscored Gardner Webb 36-14 in the first 15-plus minutes of the second half. So they're up 66-50 right now. They are going to win and advance. And this won't make me think anything differently about Virginia other than, what in the world?
Yeah.
Like, how could you not come out and just – I honestly thought they'd jump on them like 22-4.
Right.
I thought they'd be the most focused one seed in a 116 game, like in the history of the NCAA tournament, because these people, the coach and some of these players, are literally the only people on the planet who know what it feels like to be a one seed who loses to a 16. They're the only ones that ever did it.
Yeah.
I figured they'd come out and be focused, jump on them, and win the game by
30, 35, whatever they wanted to win the game by. Instead, they were down by 6 at the half. They're going to win now comfortably, probably somewhere between 15 and 20 points. But the idea that they were down in the second half, surprising to me. Meantime, Tennessee was also down in the second half. Now, they were up 42-30 at halftime, and the whole world, to the extent that the world's watching the NCAA tournament, was focused on what was happening between Virginia and Gardner-Webb. And while you were focused on that, Colgate makes a run, got Tennessee down in the second half. Now, Tennessee comes back and wins it 77-70. That game just went final a few minutes ago, and Admiral Schofield was awesome in the final few minutes. He ends up with 19 points, 4 rebounds, and an assist, but he had 2 big threes in the final couple of minutes. And it's just a reminder, one of the things I like about this Tennessee team, why I have them in the Final Four, is they got 2 guys that are just built for those moments, in Grant Williams and Admiral Schofield. Neither is ever rattled in the final minutes of a close game, and they've been in so many of those this year. High stakes game against big time competition, whether it was Kansas, Gonzaga, Kentucky, LSU. They've been in one big game after another in the final minutes, and more often than not, not every time, but more often than not, Grant Williams and or Admiral Schofield have delivered and been able to push Tennessee to a victory. Famously did it in that first game they played against Vanderbilt, in Nashville. They weren't supposed to be in a close game with Nashville, but they did find themselves in an overtime game with Vanderbilt. It was Grant Williams who took over in that game, pushes Tennessee to a win. Today, it was more of Admiral Schofield. But either way, Tennessee 77-70 over Colgate. They advance to the round of 32. Another regional team for our market played in the NCAA tournament early today. It was Ole Miss. Fell behind 11-0. Loses 95-72. Oklahoma shot 58% from the field against Ole Miss, 46% from three, 81% from the free throw line. And so it was a pretty dismal performance from the Rebels. But I would still argue big picture. And like when you get in the NCAA tournament, you want to win. And if not win, you at least want to compete. So the idea that Ole Miss didn't do either of those things today is disappointing. I'm sure for Kermit, his players, Ross Bjork, and all of the Ole Miss fans who care about men's basketball. But once the disappointment alleviates a little bit, big picture, incredible season for Ole Miss. I mean, this is a team that was picked literally last in the SEC in the preseason SEC poll. And even so, they showed themselves very early to be much better than that. They end up going 20-13 overall. They go 10-8 in the SEC. They finish 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, tied for 6th. So picked 14th, finished tied for 6th. Kermit Davis, SEC Coach of the Year. You know, this is a program that started 97th at KenPom in the country. And as of this moment, even after the loss to Oklahoma that dropped them 8 spots or 7 spots, they're still 50th. They finished top 50 at KenPom. And so, again, you don't want to perform like this when you get in the NCAA tournament. But the idea that Kermit Davis, in his first year at Ole Miss, took a team that was terrible last season and flipped it into an NCAA tournament team, and not one that was on the bubble on Selection Sunday, a team that was safely in the field on Selection Sunday. Pretty awesome job for him, even if it ended badly. Meantime, Cincinnati, for the second straight year, was eliminated from the NCAA tournament after blowing a massive lead. Well, not as massive as last season, but still double-digit lead. Last year, you might remember, Cincinnati was in the round of 32, up 22 points on Nevada. 22. Lose the game 75-73. This year, they were up 13 on Iowa early. Open the game on an 18-5 run. Lose 79-72 in the round of 64. And I talked about this earlier in the week as it related to Rick Byrd at Belmont. The reason I wanted him to, at the very least, win that first 4 game against Temple is because sometimes in this sport, and I guess all sports, but this sport included, you get these bullet points attached to coaches, and it sort of defines part of who they are. Like for Tony Bennett, it still is at this moment, never been to a Final Four. Been a one seed, I think, three different times. Never been to a Final Four. Been close multiple times. Still never made a Final Four. Same thing was true of Sean Miller, but now his bullet point is more like caught up in an FBI scandal, might not survive it, but also had one seeds, had very good teams, never been to a Final Four. For Rick Byrd, it was never won an NCAA tournament game. Had gone seven times prior to this year, had lost in the opening round all seven times. If he'd have lost this time, it would have been eight. Instead, he goes to the first four, gets a win. Then they lose to Maryland in the round of 64. But still, it is no longer true that Rick Byrd has never won an NCAA tournament game. He got that done earlier this week. And for Mick Cronin, and this is why I bring this up, he's now got a bullet point next to his name. I guess it was already there, but now it's like highlighted in bold. Loses early in the NCAA tournament way too often. Mick is obviously an incredible coach. Has rebuilt that Cincinnati basketball program that he inherited into a consistent winner with an established identity, and almost regardless of the parts, the pieces, you can sort of count on Cincinnati to be good. At least that's been true for nearly a decade now. A lot of people didn't think this Cincinnati team would be good, thought they lost too much. But instead, Jaron Cumberland develops into a conference player of the year, and they end up in the NCAA tournament for the ninth consecutive season. And yet, in these 9 years, they've only been to one Sweet 16. Mm. That was in 2012, which means seven straight years now they've been in the NCAA tournament but been knocked out short of the Sweet 16. In NCAA tournaments as a head coach, Mick has been in 11. He's been in 11, been eliminated in the round of 64 six times. So 55% of the time that Mick Cronin has taken a team to the NCAA tournament, it's lost its first game in the NCAA tournament. And until he breaks through that, people will continue to be skeptical of Cincinnati. Honestly, on a little lower level, different level than the way they are Virginia, but it's all rooted in the same stuff. You know, people will still say Virginia won't go to the Final Four. Even though Virginia's number one at KenPom, efficiency numbers are off the chart, multiple NBA players in the starting lineup, people will say, they're good all the time and they never go to the Final Four. I'll believe it when I see it. Same thing with Cincinnati, except it's not really the Final Four. It's mostly like Sweet 16. Like, yeah, Cincinnati had another good regular season. They'll lose early in the NCAA tournament like they always do. These narratives get attached to you, and the only way to shake them is to go do what they suggest you can't do or haven't done enough. And so Mick will have to live with that for at least another year. Meantime, UC Irvine did upset Kansas State. And, you know, I had two big upset predictions in my round of 64 games in my bracket. One went well, one went terribly. The one that went well was this one. Yeah. I had UC Irvine winning the game. And it wasn't just like, I'll take a flyer on them. I really did think they were good enough to win the game, especially without with Kansas State being without Dean Wade. That's their second leading scorer and their leading rebounder. UC Irvine's good at a lot of things, but they're one of the best in the country in terms of offensive rebounding percentage. They had won 30 games already this season. Russell Turner, their coach, is respected as a high-level basketball coach. So you give me a team that's won 30 games. Like, I don't care what league you're in. If you win 30 games, you're pretty good. You won 30 games, won 16 in a row, good offensive rebounding team against a team that's missing its best rebounder. I felt like that was a good place to maybe take a flyer on a 13 seed. And then they go out and win the game. Fun game, big shots down the stretch. And so Kansas State, as co-Big 12 champions, after going to the Elite Eight last season, is eliminated in the round of 64 this season by UC Irvine, a traditional mid-major and a 13 seed. And at this moment, Irvine is the lowest seeded team to advance in the main bracket of the 2019 NCAA tournament. It looked like Gardner Webb might do that when it was up double digits as a 16 seed on Virginia. But like I told you earlier, Virginia has taken control of that game, and now Virginia is going to advance. And the game has just gone final, 71-56 final score. So Virginia wins it by 15. Gardner-Webb does not advance. So at this moment, the lowest seeded team to advance in the main bracket of this tournament, it is UC Irvine. So it's been a wild day in the NCAA tournament, and tonight figures to be excellent as well. You've got Zion playing in primetime on CBS, America's Most Watched Network, Network of Stars. That's against North Dakota State, tipping off at 6:10. You've got AAC Power Houston tipping off at 6:20 against Georgia State. Mississippi State plays tonight at 6:27 tip-off on True TV. They're playing Liberty, and a lot of people picking Liberty to win the game. I got Mississippi State winning the game, but Liberty is another one of those trendy 12-5 upset situations. North Carolina with Kobe White is playing tonight. Tip-off at 8:20 against Iona. UCF from the American Athletic Conference playing VCU tonight at 8:40 on CBS. And then the last game to tip off is going to be St. Louis and Virginia Tech. It's going to tip off at 8:57. It'll be on True TV, originating from San Jose, California. So wild day in the NCAA tournament. Should be a wild night in the NCAA tournament. If nothing else, you get a day after Ja Morant looking like a superstar, the biggest star in college basketball playing in primetime. That's Zion Williamson. But, you know, the coaching carousel doesn't stop because the basketball games are going. In fact, it intensifies. And we've had two significant developments since I last talked to you yesterday. One, Alabama is in the process of negotiating a buyout with Avery Johnson, which means Avery Johnson is not going to be the head coach at Alabama anymore. And the other is that Vanderbilt fired Bryce Drew after just 3 years earlier today. As for Avery Johnson, not really that surprising. Been there 4 years, three NITs, never finished better than 10-8 in the league, finished with a losing record in the SEC three of the 4 years, never finished better than fifth in the SEC standings. Again, never, one NCAA tournament, won one game in the NCAA tournament, lost in the round of 32. That was last year. Got eliminated in the first round of the NIT earlier this week in a pretty embarrassing home loss to a team you got no business losing to if you're Alabama. Not surprising that Alabama is going to make a coaching change. Question becomes, who do they hire? And one obvious candidate is Steve Prohm, who is the head coach at Iowa State. He's an Alabama graduate, was a student manager there back in the mid-90s, graduated from Alabama, I think, in 1997. He's at Iowa State right now and has done a good job. He's now in his third NCAA tournament in 4 years, went to a Sweet 16 in year one. He just won the Big 12 tournament. So he's won two of the past three Big 12 tournaments. But for whatever reason, Iowa State fans have not embraced him. Perhaps the obvious reason is that he's not Fred Hoiberg. But when your fans, and this is not only true of Steve, I think it's true of most coaches, it's something I've talked to coaches about. When your fans don't like you or appreciate you, even when you're winning, you got to go if you can go. Because when you start to lose, it's game, set, match. I remember talking to Josh Pastner about this once. Like, there was a time where Josh had a team that was ranked in the top 25 literally every week of the season. And then they lost, you know, in the opening round of the NCAA tournament or whenever they lost. And fans were like, fire Josh Pastner. And I can remember telling Josh, man, you got it. It's time to go. Because if this fan base is fed up with you when you had a top 25 team all year long that went to the NCAA tournament, like, if that's not good enough to keep people satisfied, well, then what happens when you start losing games? Because eventually you're going to lose games. Basically everybody does except John Calipari and Roy Williams and Mike Krzyzewski. So what happens then? And we saw what happened then. Josh had a couple of bad teams, and boom, it was pay him to leave. Steve Prohm is in that situation now. He had a good team this season that started out injured and suspended, but then when they got healthy, they were good. They win the Big 12 tournament, get into the NCAA tournament safely, and yet I promise you, if he loses tonight to Ohio State, there'll be people wanting to fire Steve Prohm. And so if that is your reality, if your alma mater comes calling, and if I were Alabama, I probably would, I think you probably got to jump to that. And what would be interesting is that a lot of people think when Nebraska's NIT season is over, they're going to fire Tim Miles, try to hire Fred Hoiberg. But if this Iowa State job opens, I don't think Iowa State would fire Steve Prohm to hire Fred Hoiberg. But if the job's just open because Steve Prohm just went to Alabama, then certainly they'd be crazy not to at least try to get Fred to come back to Ames, Iowa. The question would become, does Fred want to do that? I'm not certain, but that'll be an interesting development within the coaching carousel if Alabama does make a run at Iowa State Steve Prohm. The other job that opened, Vanderbilt. And this one is a little bit surprising in the sense that if you'd have asked me a month ago, Vanderbilt hasn't won a game in the SEC yet. You think they're going to pull the trigger on Bryce Drew? I'd have said, I doubt it. Like, if he has another bad year next season, then yes. But right now, probably not. And yet, that had started to change in the past week because I had somebody tell me that Vanderbilt had a third-party search firm, person, calling around last week, basically talking to industry people, even some NBA people, and saying, hey, if Vanderbilt were to fire Bryce Drew, who would you recommend Vanderbilt hire? And even then, my source on that said, they're just considering it, but probably not going to do it. And I never got anybody to tell me that it was any different than that until this morning when they decide to fire Bryce Drew. And I guess I'd say this, because I've had people ask me about it on Twitter and wherever else they can ask you questions. GP, what do you think of Bryce Drew getting fired at Vanderbilt? Here's what I would say. I would not have fired him. He was considered one of the rising stars in the coaching profession when Vanderbilt hired him. Went to an NCAA tournament in year one. Not good in year two. But then this year was supposed to be good. And then his best player and point guard got hurt. Out for the season. 5 games into the season. And that's not an excuse for going 0-18 in the SEC. Like, I don't care who gets hurt. You got to win some. But he had already shown an ability to recruit to Vanderbilt. And this team would have been good with Darius Garland. I wouldn't have pulled the trigger on that guy without letting him have one more year. Not because I think he deserved another year, just because I think he might be good. Certainly when he was hired, everybody in the country thought he was good. He'd won like 4 or 5 conference championships. He had turned down other Power 5 jobs. I mean, he passed on Mississippi State. They reached out to him once upon a time, and I mean, I don't mind saying this. I actually got in touch with me because he wanted to ask me about Mississippi. What's it like living in Mississippi? What's it like raising a family in Mississippi? And ultimately, for whatever reasons, he decided to just pass on that opportunity. Turned down Georgia Tech when Brian Gregory got fired. You know, if he would have accepted the Georgia Tech job, Josh Pastner never gets the Georgia Tech job. So he had turned down jobs and waited for a certain type of job. And the Vanderbilt job was the certain type of job because it's a lot like the job his brother, Scott Drew, has. Private school with a specific niche. At Baylor, you can go recruit Christians all over the country and say we're the biggest public Baptist university in the country. Like, they really do play with religion there. And it works remarkably well. And at Vanderbilt, you've got this incredible academic institution in an incredible city like Nashville. Bryce recognized he had a special little niche. Maybe he'd make it work. And it was working up until Darius Garland messed his knee up, and that was it. So I would not have fired him. And I've always said this. If you are the athletic director, and Vanderbilt has hired a new athletic director like 6 months ago, and you believe that you don't have the right guy for your job, then, this is what you should do. And I think the athletic director and I might just have different opinions on this. I don't know that Bryce is the right guy for the job, but I'd have been interested in finding out with at least one more year. But if they're just convinced he's not the right guy, we just went 0-18 in the SEC, and we don't have a heralded recruiting class on the way, so how are we going to be that much better next season? And if we're not that much better next season, then we're going to pull the trigger then, so why not just pull the trigger now? Like, I get it. I don't agree with it. It's not what I would have done, but if you told me to argue in Vanderbilt's favor, I could probably put together at least a decent argument. I'll ask Dan.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
I'm walking about it.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now, back to the Gary Parish Show, live from the Bluff Restaurant and Sports Bar Studios on 92.9 FM ESPN.
This ain't a wave or a phase, because all that fades. This lifestyle's forever when you make.
Sleepy Z's Mattresses and Furniture by Michael Zauner. It's not your traditional mattress and furniture store. Prices are always 50% to 80% off retail stores, so they don't have to have sales. They're already killing the competition 52 weeks a year. Got an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau. And when readers of the Commercial Appeal were asked to vote for the best mattress store in the area, the winner, 4 consecutive years, it's been Sleepy Z's. But understand, they don't just sell mattresses. I mean, they're the best at selling mattresses, but they don't just sell mattresses. They also sell furniture, living room sets, dining room sets, rugs. Anything you need to furnish your home, you could probably find it at Sleepy Z's. And if it's not on the floor, there's a 42-inch kiosk filled with furniture. You can browse through it, find what you want. They'll get it for you. Remember to mention you heard about them on the Gary Parish Show to save an additional 10% on your purchase. That's at Sleepy Z's Mattresses and Furniture by Michael Zauner. It's located at 2790 Kirby Whitten in Bartlett at the corner of Summer Avenue next door to Hollywood Feed. The number is 901-692-6200, 901-692-6200. On the web, sleepyzzz.com. Couple big breaking news stories, if you haven't heard. One, the Attorney General has acknowledged that the special counsel has completed the Russia probe, and so we'll see where that goes. And the other big breaking news, Mike Conley officially out tonight for the Memphis Grizzlies against the Orlando Magic. That's tipping off at 6 o'clock Central right here on 92.9 FM ESPN. Dan Walken is a national columnist, USA Today, making the big interview.
Award-winning writers, athletes, coaches, the biggest names in sports. It's the Gary Parish Show Big Interview. Presented by Ruth's Chris Steakhouse in Memphis. Now on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Let's start with the big coaching news of the day. Vanderbilt, your alma mater, fired Bryce Drew after 3 seasons. Went 0-18 in the SEC this season. That's not good. What did you make of Vanderbilt's decision to pull the trigger?
I was surprised they actually did it for a couple reasons. One being the athletic director, Malcolm Turner, just got there like a month ago. And that's not typically something you want to do. Your first month on the job while you're still trying to learn the place is make a huge change like that. And Malcolm Turner's got no college athletics experience. He came from the NBA G League. He's worked at a sports agency. He's worked marketing, golf. He's done all kinds of things, but never in college athletics. So to make a big dramatic move like that, right off the bat, I was kind of surprised. Whether or not it's the right decision, time will tell. I see a lot on social media and with a lot of college basketball writers that, you know, it's not fair to fire someone after 3 years, or you're not treating somebody right by firing them or not giving them more than 3 years. I've kind of shifted on all of that just in the way I think about this stuff. Look, you've got a contract. You get paid the contract. It's up to the school to decide whether you're doing the job or not. And I think ultimately it was, I don't want to say obvious, but it was apparent that Bryce Drew was possibly in over his head in that job. Going 0-18 in the SEC is just a terrible look. I know they lost Darius Garland, but if one player is the difference between you being competent and being winless in the SEC, 22-game losing streak, I think that shows some big problems in the program. And so I just don't have a real issue with getting rid of him.
Yeah, I think you and I are on the same page here. I can't be the guy who was screaming Memphis needs to fire a coach after 2 years and then a year later go, how can you fire a coach after 3? Like, I think I would not have fired Bryce Drew. But if you are Vanderbilt and you're in charge of that, and after an 0-18 season, and you're exactly right, losing Darius Garland is what prevented them from being good. It should not have prevented them from being respectable. It should not have prevented them from being something other than embarrassing. And if you are running that school and you have reached a point where you just go, listen, this guy just had a terrible season. We learned a lot about him. There's nothing in the way of recruiting that suggests next season's going to be good enough to make us not want to do this next year. Let's just do it now. Like, I understand that. It might end up being wrong, but I can understand where – I can understand what it's rooted in.
Right. And, you know, I saw somebody – or I was talking to Rob Doster back and forth on Twitter, and he was like, well, you can't be cycling through coaches every 3 years. And I'm like, yeah, but they just had Kevin Stallings for 17.
Right.
So it's not like this is a program that's been making, you know, just flailing around, making a bunch of coaching changes, not giving coaches time to build a program or whatever. I mean, Kevin Stallings, I think in his last 5 or 6 years, had one first four appearance and one appearance in the regular tournament. And clearly he had leveled off. Like, they gave him enough time, plenty of time. And, you know, then they hire a guy in Bryce Drew, and it has fallen off a cliff. And so, again, we'll see if this is a good decision or not based on who they end up hiring and whether that person's able to get this program back. But the SEC is now a neighborhood where, you know, you've got to be pretty competitive. You can't just be out here just saying, well, we're going to give somebody time. I mean, nobody's doing that. Alabama's not doing that with Avery Johnson. It's too competitive now in that league, and I just don't think it's a decision that is without merit or value.
And especially at a school, as you pointed out on Twitter earlier today, like Vanderbilt, that really values basketball. I mean, they care deeply about men's basketball in a way that where it's not true across the board in the SEC. You could argue, and I think this is the argument you made, that basketball is just as important as football at Vandy, and that's not true at most SEC institutions. In fact, the only other place that it's definitely true is Kentucky, and it might not be true anywhere else. So let me ask you this. I put you in charge. Who would you try to hire?
I think if I were running the search at Vanderbilt, I would make a call to Shaka Smart. And I am not the biggest Shaka fan in the world, just as a coach. I think some of his weaknesses have probably been exposed a little bit at Texas. But I think he is still a viable head coach at the Power 5 level who will recruit well, run a good program. And, you know, if he could just kind of get back to the way he wanted to play when he was at VCU, which for whatever reason he got away from at Texas, I think he could be effective again. And, I mean, I'm not telling secrets here. He's kind of been looking around. I think Texas kind of wouldn't mind if he looked around. I think he's gettable if you put out the right money. And so that's what I would do.
I agree with you. I mean, he's one bad season away from being fired at Texas anyway. And I think anytime you're, particularly in a league like the Big 12, where you can be pretty good and still finish eighth, if you're one more bad season away from getting fired and your fans already don't believe in you anymore, if you could bounce to a job like Vandy, and this also matters, to a city like Nashville,
yeah,
I think I would bounce to a job like Vandy in a city like Nashville.
Absolutely. I think, as you've detailed before, you know, his wife, you know, she's into, you know, isn't she a professor or a teacher or something?
Yeah, she's super smart. She's a Harvard grad.
Yeah.
I mean, just like when you meet the Smart family, you know, you come away maybe more impressed by Shaka's wife than you do Shaka. She's really, really sharp.
Yeah, so I think Nashville's the kind of city that would appeal to that kind of couple. You know, as I know that they were very big into kind of the cultural side in Richmond, and, you know, obviously Nashville offers a lot. You know, I just think it's a tough situation in Texas. For whatever reason, it hasn't worked. I don't think Chris Del Conte, the AD at Texas, wants to be the guy who fires Shaka Smart. But I do think that's the one move that's kind of the key to the coaching carousel. It could put a lot of things in motion. I mean, as you know, obviously, there's a lot of talk about Buzz Williams going to a Texas A&M potentially once Virginia Tech season is over. You know, if you have Texas open, how does that impact Chris Beard to Texas Tech? Like, there's a lot of things that could get set in motion if Shaka were to make a jump. And I just think Vanderbilt, of all the ones that are out there or could be out there, is one that would really be an interesting fit.
Talking to Dan Walken from USA Today. He's on Twitter, @DanWalken. The biggest story of the first Thursday of this NCAA tournament It was Ja Morant. 17 points, 16 assists, 11 rebounds in an 83-64 win over Marquette. People had been talking about Ja Morant for a while. I think it's pretty clear now. Most people, even the people who were talking about him, had not really watched him play until yesterday, and he put on some kind of show. What did you make of what Ja Morant did against Marquette?
Yeah, he was terrific. Now, I think maybe some of the sonnets that have been written about his performance have gotten a little bit carried away. I've seen even some people suggesting today that maybe he should be the number one pick over Zion Williamson. Ja was terrific. He also was terrific against a Marquette team that I think packed it in about 3 weeks ago. He still, you know, is a prospect that's got a lot of developing to do. I think at the NBA level, he's going to have to shoot it better, you know, show a little bit more finishing skill than he's had to show in college. But there's no doubt. I mean, when you look at his athleticism, his passing ability, it translates against a Power 5 team just the same way it did against the Ohio Valley Conference. So, you know, that's something that a lot of people wanted to see in the tournament, and obviously it flashed in a big way. We'll see how they come out. I do think it's interesting just kind of the way the draw sets up. Murray State, like if they're in the Final Four, I just won't be shocked. You know, if he keeps doing this for four more games or three more games, the teams they have in front of them I don't think are impossible for them to overcome. And you know, I do think that would really kind of make for an interesting proposition. If he can keep this up and just will his team to a Final Four, you know, then potentially you could have him versus Duke, one versus two potentially playing in the Final Four. I mean, it's getting way ahead of it, but that possibility seems to exist today in a way it didn't yesterday.
Talking to Dan Wolkin from USA Today. He's on Twitter at Dan Wolkin. I think you and I agree. You take Zion number one. I don't care what Ja Morant does between now and then. You just cannot pass on him from a basketball or business perspective. But would you take Ja Morant number two? I might.
Yeah, I mean, the whole season has been sort of defined by what the Duke kids have done. And I think you've seen a lot of things to like about R.J. Barrett, a lot of admirable qualities in his game. I think a lot of stuff that will easily translate at the next level. But there's no question the shooting and finishing has been questionable at Duke. And a little bit of just the style of play, you know, is he going to be a guy who's got to have the ball in his hands all the time and be the primary facilitator? I don't think a lot of NBA teams are going to look at him and want him to be a primary facilitator. They'll want him to be a secondary ball handler and a guy who can stroke it from the wing. And, you know, if he's shooting 32% as a three-point shooter and he's that guy in the NBA, I think that decreases his value a little bit. So I would say as of today, Ja has passed him. But with Duke starting the NCAA tournament here in about an hour, if R.J. Barrett suddenly goes off and, you know, is averaging 24 per game and is making 44% of his threes in this tournament, I think it could flip back the other way.
Were you surprised Virginia found itself in a dicey situation again, at least for a half earlier today?
I mean, a little bit, you know, but again, I mean, these are human beings, and they've heard about this stuff for a year. They've heard a lot about it this week, and I do think you carry some of that baggage with you no matter who you are as you go in and you question it a little bit. I thought late in the first half, even though they were down 10, down 12, they started to play more like themselves defensively. And even when they were down, I think, 8 in the final 4 minutes of the half, I kind of had that sense, all right, they're going to be fine because they've started to pick up their activity level on defense. I think they kind of figured a few things out, and they're going to get energy from that. They're going to get confidence from that. And once the second half started, it didn't take but a couple minutes for the whole game to flip, and they were comfortably in control of that thing from about the 15-minute mark onward. So it wasn't too big of a scare for them, but I do think it's good mentally that they were able to dig their way out of a hole by just playing the way they have played all season.
Wrapping up here with Dan Wolkin from USA Today. Last thing before I let you go, everybody's provided their final four picks. What are your final four picks?
Well, when the bracket came out, I thought Duke was one of the teams that I was just going to pencil in no matter who they played. So that's what I did. I thought Michigan, coming out of that South region, had the best draw. You know, Gonzaga certainly played well last night, but I thought Michigan and you know, just John Beilein put a lot of faith in him as a coach. So I had them playing Duke. I had Virginia just thinking, you know, this was going to be the year that, they break through. And I don't see anyone in their bracket who poses a lot of matchup challenges for them. You know, even Tennessee, I like Tennessee. They're a good team, but they're not the kind of big, you know, team.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
That protects the rim in a way that I think Virginia could have some trouble with. So I like them to beat Tennessee in that region to get to the Final Four. And then I just picked Kentucky. Now, I didn't know about P.J. Washington's injury, and that may change the way I feel about it, but I initially picked Kentucky. If I had to redo it, I'd probably go North Carolina.
Sounds reasonable to me. That's Dan Walken, USA Today. You can read him, usatoday.com. Make sure you find him on Twitter, at Dan Walken. Thanks, buddy. I appreciate it.
All right. See you, Gary.
All right. Dan Walken, USA Today. When we come back, like I told you at the top of the show, we usually do four notable stories at 444, around 453 or something. But I wanted to stick with college basketball on a day like today because we still have games that are unfolding right now. Buffalo blowing out Arizona State, up 67-47. Oregon and Wisconsin tied 25-25 at the half. We'll talk college basketball right after this break. I'm updating you on the NCAA tournament. Buffalo is up 74-49 on Arizona State right now. Wisconsin, Oregon in a 12-5 game. But remember, it was basically a pick'em situation out in Vegas because Oregon had been playing really well down the stretch. Didn't have the resume to get anything better than a 12 seed, but from a computer perspective and from a playing how they play in lately perspective, a lot of people had Oregon winning this game. So Oregon, Wisconsin tied 28-28. The winner will advance to play UC Irvine, which upset Kansas State earlier this afternoon. The other game, Buffalo just thrashing Arizona State. It's now 74-51. And this is interesting because the head coaches have some history. Bobby Hurley used to be the head coach at Buffalo. He's now the head coach at Arizona State. When he was the head coach at Buffalo, he hired a high school coach. Yeah, to get a player, but he still did it. That high school coach was Nate Oates. Bobby Hurley got the Arizona State job, Buffalo wisely promoted Nate Oates, and they beat Arizona. Buffalo did with Nate Oates last season in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah.
And now they're on the verge of going to the round of 32 again, completely blowing out Arizona State.
This guy's got the goods, though, doesn't he, Nate Oates?
I think he's really good.
Yeah.
I think he's really good. They beat Arizona last season, then lost to Kentucky in the round of 32. Now they are beating Arizona State to go to the round of 32. This Buffalo team, sometimes when teams have big records from leagues like the MAC, you go, well, how good are they? They've just beaten up on you know, MAC teams. But all the computer numbers love Buffalo all season. You know, they sort of put themselves in the national conversation very early on by winning at West Virginia. Now, as the season unfolded, we realized that West Virginia win wasn't as good as it looked because West Virginia finished last in the Big 12. But Buffalo's sitting here right now 31-3, about to go to 32-3, and the computer numbers have been impressive basically since beginning of December. They're all the way up to 21st at KenPom right now. They're 20th in adjusted offensive efficiency, 28th in adjusted defensive efficiency. So when you got a team that's top 30 in both offensive efficiency, defensive efficiency, and adjusted for competition, and 21st at KenPom, that's a team that could play in any league in America. And it should not be surprising that they're beating Arizona State. Perhaps a little surprising that they're thrashing Arizona State. But this Buffalo team is legitimately good, and I think Nate Oates is is legitimately good. Now, you're going to run into another legitimately good coach in the round of 32 as Texas Tech. But if you're looking for what could be a fabulous Sunday round of 32 game, that Buffalo-Texas Tech game, I imagine it'll be close because it's two very good teams that have been very good all season and two high-level basketball coaches in Nate Oates and Chris Beard. Jeff Calkins up next.
Ask Alexa or Google to play 92.9 ESPN. WMFS FM and HD1 Bartlett. WMFS Memphis. A Radio.com sports station. This is 92.9 FM ESPN.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Now, back to the Gary Parish Show on 92.9 FM ESPN with Jeff Calkins on today's show, presented by the Blue Monkey.
504 Gary Parish Show, we're on 92.9 FM ESPN. Remember, we're getting out of here today at 5:30 because Grizz Magic start at 6. We got to have a pregame show starting at 5:30. That means the Gary Parish Show ends just before 5:30. So we got a limited amount of time to talk to Jeff Calkins. Let's get right to him. Jeff Calkins, how are you?
I'm good, GP.
So, Jared Kushner's brother is now a minority owner of the Memphis Grizzlies. His name's Joshua Kushner. He's also the husband of supermodel Karlie Kloss. So what does this mean for the Grizzlies?
Well, what it means is, it's all basically a spinoff of what happened last summer when Para bought out his Kaplan and Strauss, right? So he buys them out. And then, I don't know this for sure, when we reported that there are these two new owners, I do not know well enough to report that it is Para's shares, but I honestly think that stands to reason. So Para, what happens is you spend all this money for this team. It really gives you, he already was the controlling owner. Now he just has more money sunk into it. So he goes and says, what am I going to do? I'm going to go find some other people to pick up some of this slack, right? And so he finds two other owners, neither one at the level of Kaplan or Strauss, very clearly, but they're not, my understanding is it's not at the level of Ashley Manning either, right? And so these two folks, and they happen to know each other from Harvard, but they are separate transactions. One is Joshua Kushner, who is the 32-year-old younger brother of Jared Kushner, and has his own business called Thrive Capital. Actually, the funny thing is there's literally a big story in the New York Times about him today, separate from all the NBA stuff. And then the other thing, and I actually think, listen, there's no question Kushner should be the headline and is the headline and wasn't our headline and everything else. But the other part of this is that a guy named Brandon Arendelle, who is went to MUS, went to Harvard, is a Memphis guy, is an African-American. He works at Southeastern Asset Management, which is where Staley Cates, that he also bought a share. And so it's just guys, it's having people pick up the ownership group. In a practical way, the only things... It's not that meaningful that two people own less than 10% of the team, right? It's just not, they aren't going to have, Staley and Pitt didn't have veto power over what Robert Para did, and these two, is my understanding, own less than that. So really, practically speaking, I don't think it means that much, except for I do think it is good to have another local, young, dynamic African American who is invested in this in a non-trivial way, and so I think that's good. But practically speaking, doesn't mean a whole lot, really.
Any concern that now Robert Mueller is going to investigate the Grizzlies?
Yeah, it's funny, John Martin. After the story, John Martin sent me a text. He said, "Does this mean the Grizzlies are moving?" And I said, "Yes, to Russia." No, it doesn't mean any of that. Like, I understand, you know, my politics. My politics are like your politics. So, and honestly, the story in the on the New York Times about Joshua Kushner basically says he's a Democrat who didn't vote for Trump, but he did. The story is actually about some Saudi thing. He was at some Saudi investment conference, which was corresponded to when his brother was there, and wondering whether that was a little sketchy or not. But he made his own money. I mean, evidently, you know, he has started this business, and he's. I don't think it's really. I understand. Like, I'm not a. You say the name Kushner, and I immediately cringe. Right? That's just me. But I don't think there's really any implication, political implications to this at all. I don't believe that.
I was clearly joking. And beyond that, I don't think you like. I don't know anything about Joshua Kushner other than what you just told me and that he's married to a supermodel. But, you know, labeling a brother, somebody's brother, based off what you know about the brother seems crazy to me. I mean, there's a million brothers who are total opposites in this world. My brother and I aren't very much alike in terms of, you know, the things we believe in. And so... you can make a joke about having a Kushner, but by all accounts, it sounds like Josh Kushner is very different from Jared Kushner.
Well, you could. I mean, they're very clearly they're different in the sense they're different people. And the story. Anyone can go read the story in the New York Times today about this little questionable Saudi trip that he had. But the I'll quote you the. Basically, what they I'll quote you the paragraph from the Times. It said, "Here it is." Josh Kushner, however, has largely escaped scrutiny that has fallen on the Trump administration, in part because he kept his distance. He stepped away from the family business to found his venture capital firm, and he is a Democrat who has said he voted against Mr. Trump despite the family connections. Supporters of Josh Kushner note that his young firm has scored early wins and then a couple of wins and whatever else. But then it goes on to say, but the Riyadh conference drew Wall Street titans and raises some questions. So, I don't know how you deal with this anyway. Like the owner of the Buffalo Bills, he's made his business. He's made his money from fracking. Okay, that's how he's made his money, from fracking. And so, am I happy that a guy who made his money from fracking is the owner of the Buffalo Bills? I don't know how you parse that, right? I don't know how you're supposed to figure that out. I actually am happy that he kept them in Buffalo. They were going to move, and I'm happy he kept them in Buffalo. And I am. And he's the majority owner, right? The other way to look at this is. Here's too smart. I do think that the Memphis part of this is could emerge as significant. If this team is going to stay here over the long haul, who is going to emerge as sort of a Memphis presence? I had never heard of this guy, but he's a young guy, went to Harvard, smart, African-American, and I think it's good to have more local Memphis connections, and I think he will emerge as an important part of this story. It's also going to be fundamentally interesting to see I mean, I've talked about this all along. What are and were there last summer any extra provisions that lashed the Grizzlies to Memphis as part of? I've talked about this a million times as part of the ownership shifting that happened. There's also what's going to happen with the FedEx naming rights deal, which was originally I think a 20-year deal. Like there's things yet to come when it comes to the Grizzlies and ownership. I think this is just sort of part of the slight shifting, and these are two young, smart guys, and I get it. Like it's for half the people who are listening, not less than half. The name Kushner is unsavory, and it when I heard Kushner, I'm like, ooh, Kushner, that'll be interesting. But I just don't think honestly it's meaningful, particularly one way or another. And if he's a smart guy and can help the team. You know, whatever be better run in any way, that part could be a good thing. So I don't know. And we'll see. It certainly was interesting.
Talking to Jeff Calkins here on 92.9 FM ESPN. Before I let you go, you are in Omaha, Nebraska for tonight's NIT game between Memphis and Creighton. I know you just decided a long time ago to go to every game, or as many games as you could, because you're documenting this first season under Penny Hardaway. But how much do you think this matters to the big picture? Do you think Memphis fans can't wait for tip-off? Do you have a gauge for how this game actually resonates?
The funny thing is, I think this is a really low ebb game, right? I think, I mean, in the grand scheme. So you had the season. Are they going to, you know, seeding or whatever else? Are they going to get into the, you know, where are they going to be? And then you had, are they going to win the tournament? And then you had this home game, which was this incredible celebratory laugh, thank you to the team and Penny and whatever. And now I think this may be the single game that people care about the least of any game they've played since Penny started, if I'm being completely honest with you. But if they get to New York, right, win two more, I think it kicks up again, don't you? Like, so I think this is kind of a low ebb right now. If they win, great, like, but whatever. But I think if they can get back to New York, I think then people will, those things will be, people will be excited about again. The NIT is weird that way. I think the first game was really fun and meaningful because of the sentiment connected. I don't think this game has I don't think it has any larger significance, but just in terms of how interested people are, if it gets them to New York, it'll get people more interested.
I agree with that. Like when you're playing NIT games at home, they can resonate if your fans are just craving another game. When you play them away from home and heads up against the NCAA tournament,
yeah,
they just don't matter. You know, like they don't matter. Zion's on TV tonight. Nobody cares. But if you get to New York, that, like, for whatever reason, fan bases do tend to rally around that. Maybe just because it's a trip to New York. And I actually looked at the schedule. Like, I didn't really care what Memphis does in the NIT. I'm just ready for next season. But I'll be here with a night off for the semifinals. So I would like, I'll go to the Garden and see the Tigers in the semifinals of the NIT. So, yeah, it'd be nice if they could get a win, but they are about a 4.5-point underdog. This Creighton team's not good, but they're good enough, and they've got, you know, home court advantage and should have a pretty good crowd there. So I guess on that level it'll be interesting. But, you know.
People like to see a team win a title, right? So once you get to New York, whatever the title is, you like to see the team. You're in New York, Madison Square Garden. It is amazing. You go to those games. There's not many people there. Like, you and I have covered them. The NIT was, didn't you? Do you cover the championship? Or was that Zach who covered the NIT championship?
I think that was Zach. I don't, because I was trying to think the other day, had I ever gone to an NIT game at Madison Square Garden? I've obviously been to a bunch of games at Madison Square Garden, but I don't think I was at any of the Tigers NIT. I might have been. I don't know.
They're just not well attended. Like, I mean, yeah, there you are at the Madison Square Garden, and they're not, you know, but I think people like winning the NIT. Now, ask me who won the NIT last year. It was a Penn State? I think I might have looked it up. Was it Penn State?
Well, it was funny. I was thinking about this the other day, and I Googled, like, NIT, list of NIT champions. And when I saw them, I could kind of piece it together. Like, oh, yeah, I think I remember that. But, like, off the top of my head, if you were to ask me right now, name any NIT winner, like, in the past 5 years. I just can't get it. Yeah, like, last year it was Penn State, 2017 TCU, 2016 GW, 2015 Stanford. The truth is, whoever fans of the team that win it remember it, and nobody else.
No one else, right. Well, the other thing that people say, and I just found this looking at Memphis history not to be true, this idea that the NIT is a building block for the next year, I just, like, it is what it is, but I don't think it's a, I actually think bowl games and practices matter, right, in terms of getting reps and stuff. I think that's helpful for a football program. I don't really think this, like, I don't think this is, like, a built, you look at Dick Price. He went, first year he went to the NIT. I forgot that, but it's true, he did. Second year he didn't go to the NIT. Dana Finch never went to the NIT. Didn't go to the NIT. He went no postseason his first 2 years. Bango, then he goes to the NCAA tournament. I just don't think this whole, you know, building block, it might be emotionally for a fan base to see progress. Last year we weren't in, this year we're in the NIT, next year we'll be in the NCAA, but I don't think getting to the NIT this year helps you get to the NCAA next year.
Especially
James Wiseman.
Right. I mean, well, that's the other thing. Like, the bulk of this team is going to be gone, you know, like,
right.
That's like I started looking at the roster for next season. I started working on preseason top 25 and one stuff, and they're losing a lot off of this team.
Oh, they are losing a lot. Yeah, it's going to be a really young team.
I mean, like, I
do wonder if a graduate transfer might be in order. Like, I mean, Penny has not done that so far, but just in terms of experience, and I mean, you know, it would seem like a graduate transfer guard would might be help.
I mean, the only thing they got coming back right now of note is Tyler Harris, Isaiah Maurice, Alex Lomax, Antoine Jones. I would take a grad. I would go try to get involved with the top five grad transfers available, because I don't think you want to just bring those guys back with freshmen. Now they're still going to have, you know, a future lottery pick in the middle. You know, DJ Jeffries I think is going to be very good. They're still going to be good, but it's not. I guess I'd put it this way. It ain't crystal clear that you should have them in the top 25 in the preseason. I'm going to, just because I don't want to hear about it. But it's not crystal clear.
They might be the and ones. Are you telling me they're looking like they might be the and ones?
No, I'll have them probably. I would assume I'll have them somewhere in the 20s. That seems reasonable. But I promise you this. Not everybody will have Memphis in the preseason top 25. Based on what's coming back and what's enrolling, it will not be crystal clear to everybody that they have to be. But we'll see. Either way, enjoy the game tonight. We'll be following you on Twitter.
All right. See you, man. Bye.
I'll see you. That's Jeff Calkins. We're going to take a quick break, and I mean quick break, and then knock out dinner to go. I've got my Dateline preview for tonight. Hang with us.
My neighbors always ask me, hey, Pete, how do you keep your yard so nice?
Pete makes it simple with a Scotts Turf Builder feeding program. It's the best way to get a greener, stronger lawn, guaranteed. All it takes is four easy feedings. Just once in early spring, late spring, summer, and fall. Providing your lawn the nutrition and weed control it needs to stay lush and green.
So, now you know my secret.
This is a Scotts Yard. Pick up a Scotts Turf Builder program today.
We alarm our houses, and we alarm our cars. But when it comes to your personal information, it can be tough to know when something isn't right. That's where Discover Card can help. Now, we'll send you an alert if we find your social security number on any one of thousands of risky websites. And this service is free for card members. Just sign up online. It's our way of looking out for you, not just your account. Learn more at discover.com/free alerts.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now, back to the Gary Parrish Show, live from the Bluff Restaurant and Sports Bar Studios on 92.9 FM ESPN.
The hood got heavy metal lights lit now. I hustle for my chain like a pit stop. I used to want a grip.
New Amsterdam Vodka. It's a premium 80-proof vodka made from the finest quality grains. 5 times distilled for unparalleled smoothness. Filtered 3 times to create a soft finish. How smooth is it, Mr. Big Chest?
It is so smooth you can drink it straight.
So smooth you can drink it straight. Doesn't mean you got to, but if you are somebody who mixes your New Amsterdam Vodka with something and you happen to run out of your mixer, you don't have to have a panic attack. You just drink it straight. So smooth you can drink it straight. They got flavored vodkas. Grapefruit, apple, peach, orange, mango, pineapple, redberry, coconut, lemon, raspberry. So if you're into flavored vodkas, New Amsterdam's got you covered. Also, there you have a gluten-free vodka now. So if you're on a gluten-free diet, New Amsterdam's got you covered. Next time you're in a bar or a restaurant or a wine and spirit store, you make sure to ask for it by name. It's New Amsterdam Vodka, the fastest growing brand of vodka in the United States of America. New Amsterdam Vodka, pour your soul out. On the web, newamsterdamspirits.com. That's newamsterdamspirits.com. NCAA tournament games continuing to unfold. Oregon up 48-42 on Wisconsin right now. 8:35 remaining in that one. Buffalo up 86-67 on Arizona State. 2:44 remaining in that one. And the next game to tip off is going to be about 5:50, Washington and Utah State. That game's in Columbus, Ohio. It's an 8-9 game in the Midwest Regional. Let's do dinner to go.
Dinner to go is brought to you by Memphis Barbecue Company. It's dinner to go. What did we learn today?
Whole bunch of stuff, but we mostly spent time on the NCAA tournament because it's been a wild afternoon in the NCAA tournament. Tennessee and Virginia, top 2 seeds in the South Regional, were both down in the second half to 15 seed and a 16 seed. Both pulled away and won late, so they advanced. Ole Miss got blasted by Oklahoma, lost 95-72. Cincinnati got eliminated early in the NCAA tournament again after blowing a double-digit lead again, this time to Iowa, 79-72. UC Irvine with the upset of the day so far eliminated Kansas State. That was a 13 seed over a 4 seed. So UC Irvine advances to play the winner of this Oregon-Wisconsin game. It looks like it's going to be Oregon, so we could have a 13 versus 12 matchup in the round of 32. And tonight, I think the biggest thing is the biggest thing. Zion Williamson. Duke Blue Devils open the NCAA tournament against North Dakota State. That's going to tip off at 6:10. You can watch it on CBS.
What's the biggest game tonight?
Memphis Creighton, downtown Omaha. The Tigers are 22-13, ranked 60th at KenPom. Blue Jays, 19-14, ranked 54th at KenPom. So these are comparable teams, at least according to the computer. But Creighton is a 4.5-point favorite. Total's 159.5. Tip scheduled for 7:30. You can watch it on ESPNU.
What should I watch on TV?
We got a brand new Dateline NBC tonight at 9 o'clock. Excellent. Are you ready for my preview?
I'm ready for the official Gary Parrish Friday preview.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Here we go.
Okay.
College football player sitting on a front porch in Kentucky. It was a normal night. Until it wasn't. A bullet came from somewhere. From someone. And Trent DeGiro, the birthday boy, was dead. Right there on that porch. Who killed him? Why? That's tonight on Dateline.
Gary? Who's hosting? Please, Keith Morrison. Come on.
Keith Morrison reports.
Keith Morrison, the GOAT, is back tonight.
Do we have time for some Keith Morrison audio or not?
Yeah, let's do it. We got time. Here we go.
Give me the Keith Morrison preview.
It was late at night in this house right here, in this town in Kentucky, a college town.
Yes.
And a college football player was sitting right there in a chair on the deck, and he suddenly slumped over to the side. And his friends rushed over to find out what was the problem. And they discovered he was dead. A bullet came from somewhere. But where and who fired it? And what was the bizarre reason? Discovered long, long after the fact. Coming up on Dateline.
That's the GOAT. That's Keith Morrison, the GOAT. That's Keith Morrison, the GOAT. That's tonight, 9 o'clock on NBC.
Is there anything I need to make sure I read?
You telling me we get Zion Williamson and Keith Morrison on TV on the same night?
Yes.
Zion the GOAT and Keith Morrison the GOAT on TV on a Friday night. I don't know why you'd leave your house, for crying out loud. Reed, Dan Wetzel wrote a column about Tom Izzo getting in a player's face yesterday in a way that gained a lot of attention because it happened on the stage the NCAA tournament provides. You haven't read that yet? You can find it Yahoo Sports.
What's on tap next week?
Well, the Tigers could still be playing next week or not, so we'll figure that out by Monday. Could spend Monday discussing Johnny Manziel's debut with the Memphis Express. The race to convey will continue, and the Sweet 16 will be set Sunday night. We'll break it down on Monday's show. Should be fun. And I'm supposed to be back in Memphis.
Nice.
So I'm looking forward to that. Enjoy your weekend. I'll enjoy mine. Meet me back here Monday at 4. Till then, be careful. Be kind. Be good. Rep your hood.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.